Hey, what's up, my friend? Today, I've got another special organization on the show. The founder is here with us, and she is a mom of three living in New York City. Her company is called NEAR, and their mission is to help connect and care for others during times of serious illness and grief. The idea was born after her husband was diagnosed with brain cancer. The first time was 3 weeks before they got married, and the second time was after he became a husband and a father to their kids. So today she's going to talk more about how we can use NEAR to love those around us. Because, you know, it can be really hard to know what to do, how to be most helpful when we know someone's going through a crisis in their life. And then she's going to give us the backstory, her testimony of walking through this brain cancer journey two times and how she's been able to tackle the difficult questions and conversations she's had to have with her kids. So grab your coffee and settle in, my friend, because it is my pleasure to welcome Jane Butler. So, Jane, let's start with this question as we get into your story and how you've been able to deal with really difficult diagnoses within your marriage as well as with your kids. When it comes to difficult circumstances, especially when it comes to health conditions and even tragedy, do you think it's possible to keep life full as you're walking through that season?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like as moms, our lives are already pretty full, right? So if something unexpected comes along, we just feel like we're going to overflow and crash. I think one of the biggest things within motherhood generally, even without tragedy involved, is the aspect of community, right? We're made to live with each other, among each other, to be known. And although that takes a lot of vulnerability, it's worth it because when difficult times come, we need to be able to rely on the community that we've built and the friendships that we've built. And I think we have to move past this, like, the insecurity we have as moms of, like, we have to do things a certain way and, like, our family has to be a certain way versus just, like, welcoming people in and say, like, we're going to do this together and we're going to live life alongside each other so that when difficult times come, life does get really full and yet those people can step in and that's the church, right? Like the church can come around and say, we're going to carry you through this difficult time because without the community, you can't do it all by yourself. Or you can, and some things will fall. And so to be able to balance being a mom, a wife, a working mom, and then something terrible hits, it's like, you have to utilize the community around you.
Yeah. And I think it's the acceptance of that too, right? Because I think a lot of us, it's hard to accept help because of, you know, some of the things you mentioned. Maybe it's like, oh, my house is a mess. I don't want anyone to see it. Or, oh, my kids are crazy. I don't want them to see that I don't have everything under control. Yeah. So just like accepting the help, I think is so important. And then also another thing I've been thinking about are just micro moments in general. Keeping life full and happy and joyful can feel like it has to happen in really long lengths of time. But you can have a really chaotic, difficult day, whether it's during a difficult season or it's just that particular day has been really hard. It can be really difficult most of the time, but if you can hold on to those little moments of joy, maybe it's a smile on your kid's face, or maybe, I don't know, something made you laugh for 5 seconds. Really holding on to that, I think, can also help keep life full.
Yeah. And I think the attitude of gratitude, right? Like my kids every night and typically even before bed, we just say, what's one thing you can be grateful for today? One thing, like from the weather to the food on your plate to something you did at school or you've done at home. Like there's just to be able to cultivate that attitude of gratitude, like just to be thankful, you could always find something. And that really does keep your days
100%. So Jane, let's get into your story here. Tell us what happened. I also love to learn more about, you know, what you learned about God and how you were able to leverage your faith as you went through the difficult seasons in both a, you know, spiritual sense, but also a practical sense, like some of the things that you did to trust God through it. And so your husband was diagnosed with brain cancer. I think it was before you had kids. And then again, it came back and after as well. So how's he doing today?
Yeah. So let's rewind first and kind of retell the story of what happened. So in 2014, a month before we were going to get married, he started to have headaches. And he was in law school, so we assumed stress and headaches that come from that. And he ended up having a MRI due to the fact that over-the-counter medication was not getting rid of the pain. And that resulted in the discovery of a 9-centimeter mass in his brain that was quickly expanding to the point that he had days before he before his life was going to be taken from him because he it was swelling his brain so quickly. And so we essentially jumped on a plane the next day and flew to Kansas, which is where he's from. And he was able to have surgery a few days later because the steroids had kicked in. So we were able to plan a surgery within a few days. And we, you know, that surgery was successful. And I say that very humbly and gratefully. Not everyone can say everyone had a successful surgery. So he came out of that surgery and did not need any further treatment. They wanted to monitor him for any regrowth. And we were able to get married 25 days later, which is just a wild way to end an engagement.
Yeah.
And enter a marriage, right? Like you're all excited. You're like, the candle and your wedding's on. And then it's like, yeah, and tragedy. And like, you know, a really, really big life or death scenario right before you get married. And so we then got married. And we just thought our brain tumor story was over. And that really changed actually the way we see marriage, see life, see God, see suffering, all of the things. And so we kind of entered into this like beautiful 8-year journey of living not only with different perspectives and keeping the little things little and the big things big, but we also just kind of grew from that thinking it was over and to a fault, probably just assumed that we were more bulletproof than, you know, than any other human because we already had our big moment or big tragedy. And then last August, he was experiencing some just heightened sensitivity in his scar area. And we went back in for another scan that we had done and they discovered regrowth. And so he had to undergo another surgery 8 years after his initial surgery. And that was a really difficult reality for me because my then fiance in 2014, to think of losing him or to go through life without him was a lot different than thinking about losing my husband, my father of 3 children, like who he was. I've known him for 10, you know, almost 13, 14 years at that point. Really changed the way I saw the surgery and my frustration with the Lord of like, why is this happening again? And just everything, right? Like it all came back in a totally different way and how I see our future too. And so he was able to go through that surgery. We were in New York at the time and he is doing okay today. So we hold it lightly that there could always be regrowth and we recognize the fragility of life in even our everyday moments. And that's kind of what brings me up to date of like why I'm here talking with you and sharing our story.
Yeah. Praise God that he's okay today.
Yeah. 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 It's a very like, it's, there's a lot of like humility I have of like, he doesn't have to be here today. Like the Lord has really given him, you know, the wisdom of the proverb, like teach us to number our days. Is like, we really do. Like no one is exempt from this and that's okay. Like we live with that knowing that like the Lord has our days numbered. He knows our children. He knows he's cared for all the days prior to us and past us and to be able to sit in that peace. It makes you praise the Lord for his sovereignty.
Yeah. I've been reading through Job the last week and I don't know. I don't even know why I went to the book of Job, because I've been in the New Testament for most of the year. And then I thought, oh, let me just go and read, you know, one of the Old Testament books. Maybe it was in preparation for this conversation. I don't know. I just made the connection in my mind. But, you know, the whole idea of suffering, it's so easy to blame God for it, right? Like, God, why are you doing this to me again in your situation where the brain cancer came back?
riskier point in your life where he has become a father. You now have kids. You now are a wife. It's so easy to say, God, why are you doing this to me? What have you learned about suffering and who God is just through your journeys?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I'm still learning. So I don't have it all figured out. I feel like our days, the Lord is always teaching us something. And so I feel like it's kind of I'm always a student of what life brings. I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is that God's goodness is not dependent on what happens in my life or what he allows, right? His nature and who he is good through and through. When tragedy hits, God is still good. If tragedy doesn't hit, God is still good. And I don't want people to say that as like a blanket statement, because it's true regardless of what happens. Mm-hmm. And I think what I've been really able to experience is to see two things, to see God's faithfulness in just sustaining me and our kids and giving us the strength to be able to walk through that, and his comfort in those moments of saying, this is a difficult time. He knew these times were going to be in our lives. He knew this was our story, and he comforted us through it. And then I also have seen just the way the church has been able to care well and equip people that are in difficult times to support and love them well. And then I also, if you look at the life of Jesus, I mean, he went through one of the most difficult times, right? And he didn't just, he was angry and he was frustrated. Like, why? Like, let this cup pass from me. Like, I don't want to do this. And he lamented. And I think there's a place that we need to have as Christians to just lament, right? Like, just to say, this is hard. And there might not be any solutions, and life is hard, and to sit with that and to have another body of believers sit with you and say, yeah, life is hard, and our God is faithful, and he is with us, and he will carry us through it regardless of the outcome, because the outcome is ultimately to be with him in eternity. But just to give permission to lament and to not avoid our pain or diminish our pain, but to simply vocalize the hardness of it. I think you see that through the Psalms. Like, if we were to actually read the Psalms the way they were written, it would be a lot of lamenting. Like, a lot of the Psalms would be just like, this is so hard. I'm in the pit. And that's, I want to be able to read them that way and not feel like we're just like, you know, put the bow on top and you're good to go. But that God is a kind father who wants to comfort you through difficult times. And so there's a bigger intimacy of knowing God as a father when you walk through suffering that I feel like I wouldn't have gotten if I, you know, didn't experience what we've experienced.
You mentioned you wrestled with God, you were frustrated with him. Today, you are embracing who God is and recognizing all the ways he was good during, you know, those two journeys. And even now, right? How did you get there? What were some of the ways in which you wrestled with God and some of the ways in which you also leaned in to him to know who he is and to embrace the fact that he is good despite what you're going through?
I feel like I wrestled with him probably more. Well, they were different. They were different ways of just being like recognizing like what was happening. I think I was upset when Andrew was diagnosed the second time, partially just because we as humans just start to think that we're exempt from certain things, right? We just think like, well, like surely that won't happen to us, or I already had my difficult time. Like, I won't have to go through it again. Like, there's just no way. Like, why would I have to go through things twice? And I remember praying the second time, so last summer. And I felt the Lord really say, you know, Jane, I'm allowing this to happen as he is sovereign over all. I'm allowing this to happen because I will be most glorified from the outcome of this. I could do other things. He could do other things. He could allow other things. He could do beautiful, incredible, bigger things, but he's allowing this to happen ultimately for him to receive the most glory. And that's what our lives should reflect. And that's been our hearts since, you know, trusting that Christ is our savior, that like our lives need to just glorify him. And so there's this like dying to self which is just like, okay, like my dream of being married to somebody for 30 years, which, you know, still could come true. It might not come true, but that my dream of that needs to still be underneath the fact that my life should glorify God. And that's it. Like, that's the end result of what I want my life to be. And for others to know the goodness of God, despite what life throws at you. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like the second time I really had to get to a place of surrender, of like, okay, like, you're allowing this to happen. I'm going to trust that you will see us through regardless of the outcome. And I feel like that kind of pivoted how I worship the Lord and how I talk about him to my friends and how I'm able to really describe who he is and his character at his heart. And then on top of that, from what has happened, to be able to really rely on hope. I know that a lot of people use hope as like, you know, faith, hope, and love. And I think hope has a lot more of a real impact when you look at your past life and you're like, I don't know if I want to dream again. I don't know if I want to be able to dream. Like, what if like next summer he has another tumor? Like, what if? And I felt like I was stopping to dream, and I love dreaming. And through therapy, I remember my counselor saying, that's why we have hope. That's why you have to say like, I hope I get to do this. I hope I get to, I hope that God's able to give us, you know, 40 more years together, and to place that hope in still underneath the, like, I hope I could do this. And yet God is still sovereign to carry us through until him. And so there's like this sweet tension of, just hope, being hope filled and being able to walk it out without having to linger in the pain and the grief of what we experienced.
Yeah. And I think hope takes on an even deeper meaning when you relate it to who God is, as you said, and yet God will still be good. You know, it's yes, continue to hope, but also know who's in control. And then there's the eternal hope, right? Maybe your hopes and dreams and wishes don't come true in this life, but there is the hope and promise of eternity. And I think that's the big difference between like an earthly hope and, you know, hope in Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Walk us through how you know, what you said to your kids. What are some of the things you did to help them through last year's difficult journey?
Yeah, conversations with kids can be really hard and really life-giving because there's just so, they're curious and they question, and the way they phrase things, you're just like, I think it's so special that when you get to do it with kids, it's harder because they're like pieces of your heart walking around. But I remember sitting down with our son, our younger two, we had to just simply, you know, it was a very simple, daddy's sick, he needs to go to the hospital. And my sister was extremely, extremely kind and generous to scoop them up and take care of them for the week that we were in surgery and recovery in the ICU. And so I'm grateful for her support for taking them off my hands for a few days.
And they were, how old were they? 7?
So Jack was 7, and then my younger two were 4 and 2. So they were little. They just knew that something was going on and that daddy wasn't feeling well. My 7-year-old was the most curious and wanted to understand what could happen, like all the possibilities, right? He wanted to just be well aware of what could go on. And so we were very honest with him. We were honest with him about the worst situation that could happen, and that that we can walk through this because daddy knows Jesus, and that Jesus is the one that gives us the peace to be able to talk through this and walk this out. And I think there's a thing about like talking about death specifically that kids see all the time, but we try to eliminate, right? Like when flowers die, we just kind of toss them out, and it's like, you know, they die, or like our fish died. And we had to tell the kids, like, our fish has died. Like, it's a reality. And so we don't hide it from them, but we let them ask the questions. Why? Like, what would happen? Like, how do we know? And we open up those conversations of, if he at any point wanted to ask us a conversation or a question, we wanted to sit down and give him our full attention, because kids are always thinking about it, right? They're just like, it's kind of always in their head, bouncing back and forth. And then the question might pop up. And so giving them the space to just ask questions that might seem silly to us, but that are really meaningful to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I'd love to take a minute for you to speak to moms who might be going through a similar circumstance in that they're dealing with a difficult health diagnosis, whether it's for themselves or, you know, maybe it's a spouse or maybe it's even their child, or going through, you know, tragedy. What are some things that you'd like to say to them to just encourage their faith during this difficult season?
Yeah. I think just recognizing first that, like, I'm sorry that they're going through it. Like, it's something that just saying, I'm so sorry it's happening to you, right? Like, it's still not something that they've asked for or they've set themselves up for. Like, it really is part of living in this broken world. And so I think just saying, I'm sorry that this is happening to them, and giving them space to lament and just say, and be angry. I think what's also really interesting is, like, we approach these tragedies, and throughout grief, there's obviously different stages, but one of them is anger. Mm-hmm. And we forget so easily that anger is like a huge umbrella. And then underneath the umbrella, there's actually a lot of other emotions, right? There's, I'm frustrated, I'm sad, I'm scared, I'm grieving. And so to be able to say, like, I'm angry this is all happening, or like, I'm angry that I have to interrupt my whole life for this, or I have to miss out on this. But to be able to also articulate, you're sad that this is happening. You are grieving the loss of this. You are confused. Like, there's a lot of other things that we can pull from and write down and process through without just blanketing it and numbing our hearts to say, like, well, I'm just angry, you know? Take the time to really, like, check in with all the other emotions that are underneath that umbrella of anger, I think is something that I would encourage them to do. And then to just know that to find a church in their area or a friend, and just not do it alone. Like, even if it's just a friend to call, or if it's a friend to sit with. I know that I had, like, different friends for different purposes, and they were all willing to just be helpful. But it was like, you're the friend that I want to sit and have coffee with. You're the friend I want to go on a walk with. Like, there's different strengths that our friends can have. You're the friend that I don't want to see after the recovery, because your strength is actually, you know, there's different strengths that our friends have. And I know that one of my dear friends helped me facilitate, like, what do you need? And I was like, I need childcare. I need someone to pick up the mail because our mailbox is overflowing. I need actually someone to get groceries because the kids need breakfast. Like, there were things that I was like, these are different tasks that I want help with. And someone facilitated that too, which is just a huge gift. Like, the gift of facilitating an organization comes to, like, you know, the top when tragedy hits, because there's a lot to manage during those times.
Yes. Yes. And accepting it, accept the help. I'm talking to myself too. I have a really hard time accepting help.
I think accepting help, it gives them the opportunity. People, like, can so easily throw meals and money, but other people have so many gifts, and it's like, let them love you the way God crafted them to be. And if that's through meals, or if that's through childcare or sweeping your house, that's great. Like, we don't need to show off this polished look. Like, as Christians especially, like, we're broken people saved by God's grace. And so there's a reason why we need God's grace. Like, there's a reason why we came to that reality. And so, be vulnerable. I think Brené Brown's, you know, huge mission, like, as opinionated as some people might think she might be, that vulnerability fuels connection. And that's got to come during a time of tragedy and hard times for us to let down our guards and say, okay, I think I would rather connection during this time than me lose it all and juggle and, you know, miss out on what could be a more comforting season.
Yes. Yes. And speaking of connections, as well as identifying, you know, what good is coming out of these really difficult circumstances, you've created this beautiful organization called NEAR that helps people connect and support those who are walking through really, really difficult times, whether it is tragedy, whether it is diagnoses, whether it is maybe it's a miscarriage even. So tell us more about NEAR and what it helps people do.
Yeah, so NEAR is like an online platform that kind of pulls together all the things we might need during a difficult time, right? Whether that's through grief or loss or the end of life for somebody. So there's our care registry, which helps people facilitate tasks and gifts. There's some really beautiful gifts out there that are unique to specific situations. And so we have a care registry. We have a care directory, which highlights some of our favorite partners in the space that that offer services, whether it's getting, like, there was a lot of things that we don't talk about in society that, like, Andrew and I had to tackle. We had to do our will. We had to figure out our where certain things would go, like what would happen to our kids. We talked about the five wishes document, like what would happen if, you know, he woke up from surgery and he wasn't who he was prior to surgery. Like, what do I do? And we had to get all those things in line. And those are things that I'm like, we should just do even when we're not in difficult times, right? Because we just should be able to know and be prepared. And it's it's pure adulting, right? Like, we're just like, we got to do it. It's not something that we want to do, but I do think that it's necessary and it's helpful for our family and our kids if we do it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm all about educating on that. And so, yeah, we've created a kind of a care registry, the care directory, and some caregiving resources. And then we are working on some celebration of life ideas because we do want people to build their legacy, celebrate their life well. And so we are building out that side of the things with programs, invitations, a lot of the really neat ideas to kind of come around that and to highlight someone's life well.
That's amazing. And such a, and you, I think you do it so gently and lovingly as well, because it's really not something people want to think about.
No.
It's sad and it brings you down, but, you know, to do it in such a loving and gentle way, I think is the real beauty here.
Thank you. Yeah. And I also think there's always a place the people that are impacted by somebody else's hard time, there's always a place that you can step up and serve and learn, right? Like, learn for yourself, learn for how to better support them. Or if you're a gift giver, like, there's just some really beautiful things that you can do to be thoughtful. And that might bless them. You might give them a gift, but it might bless them with just the reality that you were even thinking of giving them a gift. Like, there's a lot of really unique ways that someone can feel loved during difficult times.
Yes. I love it. So where can moms go to learn more and connect?
Yeah. So they can go to stayneer.co. And we actually have several resources for your community that will be able to download our holiday gift guide that just came out, which we're really excited about. It's for different situations during the holidays that I think will be really great for people that are looking to give someone who's in the hospital or someone who's recently lost a spouse. So we have a gift guide, and then we do have a caregiving checklist that is helpful to download, and there's some other goodies. So that's stayneer.co/momsgrabcoffee, and you can get all the resources there.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing your heart and all your wisdom today, Jane.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, my friend, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I know the last 2 weeks have been a little tough. Last week, we talked about how to love vulnerable children. Today, we're talking about how to love those with serious illnesses and grief and tragedy. I think those are such important topics. And next week is also going to be an important topic, but we're going to lighten it up a little bit here. We're talking about Santa Claus. So follow Moms Grab Coffee wherever you are listening, and I'll catch you again next week for a cup of coffee with a side of faith, wisdom, and hope.